Hello, party people, and welcome to a non-technical office hours. And I'm only going to answer three questions. Y'all put in three non-technical professional development type questions over at PoleGab, and I thought these kind of deserve their own stream because they're big, wide-ranging questions. I have a nice cup of a tasty beverage here where I can go talk at length with it. So let's go knock these out. And I'm going to go a little out of order. Normally I tackle the top voted ones first, but the top voted one is so good and I'm going to spend so long talking about it that I want to tackle the other two first. So one of them, Kinneret asks, when are work communications appropriate for a chat channel like Slack versus when should those communications take place via direct audible communications like phone or WebEx? Okay, some of it is when you have to break bad news to people. I'm going to give you the simple example because a lot of people on here are employees resigning. If you need to resign, you probably want to do that in an environment where it's as personal as possible. Video chatting, web chatting, whatever. Assuming that you built up a relationship with a boss that, or manager, technically correct term, that you care about, you would want to do that in as personal as an environment as possible. If you were in an office, you would want to go in and close the door as opposed to just sending them something via email. Bad news, I'm out of here. So that's one thing to think about. Another thing to think about is when it's legally sensitive, and I'll give you a great example from my own past, software licensing. There was a point where I was working for a company and I was pretty sure that we weren't licensed for SQL Server. Like maybe somebody had found a download somewhere. So I went into my boss's office and I said, look, here's the thing. I don't think we're actually licensed for this. I need to cover myself so that it doesn't look like I installed this without licensing. I'm going to send you an email. And just says, you know, in an hour or so, whatever, I'm going to send you an email asking, you know, hey, here's how many cores of licensing that we're using for SQL Server. Before I put that in writing, is there anything that you want me to include with that or say so that you can forward it up to other people on your team? So doing those things that will come back to bite you in the rear end later legally, just having a discussion first to make sure that you don't set someone's career on fire if you put something in writing the wrong way. So hopefully at least that gets you started. Next up we have What's Up Docs says, hi Brent, have you ever needed to look at business documentation when consulting or as an employee, but it was severely lacking? Nobody ever has documentation that's the quality you want. You go to war, there's a great saying by, I think it was Donald Rumsfeld, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you want. Well, you go into technical work with the documentation you have, not the documentation you want. If you have enough time to thoroughly type up perfect documentation, that usually means that the application or processes aren't changing at all, that they're extremely stable, that nothing's in flux. So if you find it important enough personally that you need accurate, up-to-date documentation in order to do your job successfully, some people do, some people don't. If you need that, you're going to want to go to work for the largest company possible, working on the most stable product possible. Something that's been around for 50 years, is subject to compliance requirements, where people have had lots of time to type up the documentation. You will be less satisfied working for a fast-moving company, a .com, working with quickly changing open source products, state-of-the-art databases, because there just hasn't been the time or the motivation to create that documentation. Rather than railing against the documentation at the team that you're at or the company that you're at, this is your opportunity to learn about yourself, to say, oh, I function well in stable, mature, long change or long lasting environments. You want to go to work for the Fortune 100, for example, in a very traditional team. And then next up, the big one, Roy asks, hi Brent, how did you manage to upskill yourself early in the career with a busy full-time job? What recommendations would you give to somebody early in their DBA career? Okay, first we need to define what a full-time job is. Everybody's got a busy full-time job, right? You know, like nobody has a full-time job where they're sitting around bored. Not in today's economy. They get fired, they get laid off. You need to reset expectations that you think you're somehow busier than everybody else. You're not. The reason that you think you're busy is that you care more about your job than maybe you perceive other people doing. You think you have so much to do because you care so passionately about the work that you're doing and you want to do a good job of it. And that's good. That's great. That's a sign that you're on a track for a career that you're going to be in for the rest of your life and you're really going to love, because you feel like you have so much to do and so little time to do it. At the end of the day, you're still bursting with energy at, oh my gosh, there's all this I want to get done. There just aren't enough hours in the day. Being busy means you love your work, but also, now it's up to you to set an end time every day. Your employer only buys so many of your hours per week. And it's really easy when you love your job to say, let me give you more. I want to give you more. I love what I do. I'm really busy. Let me keep working. But if you want to raise your skills, you have to recognize that you have another employer, and that employer is yourself, is your family, is your people that you love. And when you check out, you have other things that you need to go do. You need to upskill yourself, but also you need to spend time with the people that you care about. I'm not here to talk about work-life balance. The thing that's really important here with this one is setting that end time. Understanding how many hours a week your employer really pays for, and you have to clock out and you have to go clock in at proactively learning. I'll give you an example. There was a point in my career where my SAN administrator at my company quit. The SAN administrator quit, and I went into my boss's office, closed the door, and I said, look, I don't care what that person was making. I will do their job for no extra money in addition to my current responsibilities. The thing is, I want all the access that they had. I want full unfettered access to the SAN. I want to learn and understand how these things work. And I knew that I was going to be working a lot of extra late hours. And sure, that benefited the company, but what it was really about was benefiting myself and my skills going forward, that I knew that those extra hours that I would spend doing that person's job would benefit me later in my career. Same thing with, for example, VMware administrator. You have to have enough flexibility, enough wiggle and room in your calendar that you can do things like that. And you can't do that if you've already committed 60 or 80 hours a week to your full-time employer. I want, like anyone who's ever worked for me, I want you to stop working at a certain time, and I want you to go spend time with your family, invest in yourself, whatever it's going to be. This is tough for some of us who believe that we owe our employer everything, but remember, you also owe yourself and your family things. Take a hard, serious look and ask yourself, what's the number of hours that my employer is paying for? And then put that on your calendar. Let's say that you believe that your employer is spending salary, annual salary level numbers in order to get you for, let's just say, 48 hours a week. I think that's on the high side. Realistically, the bargaining between company and employee, really they're buying you for 40 hours a week, and in some countries it's even less than that. But they want 40 good hours out of you per week, and staying longer is on you, not on them. You're here because, remember, you think yourself as busy, you see yourself as really loving what you do, and you want to do more of it so that you believe you're doing a good job. That doesn't mean you should do it for free. You need to think about how many hours a week they're paying you for, and if you believe that it's 60, okay, you're not going to upskill. You're going to toil away in the data mines for 60 hours a week. You're going to make your employer very happy, and maybe you're even getting paid enough that that change of hours for time or hours for dollars makes sense, but you're not going to get upskilled. You're going to spend all your time doing tasks that check boxes for your employer. The hard part for me as an employee was understanding that, oh, they're only really paying me for 40 hours a week. They would love 60 or 80, but they're only paying me for 40. And furthermore, they wouldn't fire me if they got 35 great hours a week out of me. I look around at my company and I'm like, not the Brenos aren't limited, but other companies I worked for in the past. And I'm like, oh my God, that person over there, they're not even getting 10 hours a week out of that person. That person's incompetent. They suck at their job. They're overpaying that person, and yet they still have a job. If you care enough about your job that you believe that you're busy, you probably are giving 40 great hours a week at your company, and they're getting huge bang for the buck, especially in this economy where it's really hard to find good people who are passionate and care about the work that they're doing. So you've got to set that ending closing time and say, beyond this time, I'm going to leave. If anybody asks, I'm going to say I have a family commitment. I have some other commitment, my kids, whatever it is. I'm going to have that commitment. I'm going to leave. And then if I have other hours in the day, maybe I upskill myself, or maybe I spend it just recovering personally. But don't let yourself get it to the point where you're spending 60 hours a week because you think you owe it to your company. No company is paying you enough money to warrant you spending 60 hours a week there. They really just can't find other people, or they have decided not to pay other people, and they're going to wring as much blood from that stone, the stone being you, as they possibly can. Another way that I've thought about it in the past is I've sat down and I've said, okay, what does my resume look like 5 years from now? What is it that's going to be on my resume 5 years from today? And you're probably working somewhere else. How much does that suck, right? You're probably working somewhere else. So in 5 years, when you're writing out that resume and you're looking back at the time that you spent, did it make a difference whether you were working 40 hours a week at this company or 50 hours a week? I bet you wouldn't remember. I bet you wouldn't notice the difference between 40 hours and 50 hours a week at a company. And if, like, think back from yourself 5 years ago. If you look back 5 years ago, were you working 40 hours a week at a company or 50 hours a week? You don't really remember the difference. It all kind of blurs together. You were busy. But I tell you what, if you put 10 hours a week into a side project, learning, upskilling, building something on the side, if you spent 10 hours a week on the side doing something else, that's 500 hours a year. You would remember that. 500 hours a week, or 500 hours a week, you would remember the heck out of that. 500 hours a year on a side project, or building a presentation, or building your blog, or building an ebook, or writing an open source project. 500 hours a year of that, you will absolutely remember that, and that changes you for the rest of your life. The book that influenced me the most on that answer was Getting Things Done by David Allen. It's not trendy anymore, you know, productivity books come and go. But the thing that I liked about David Allen's Getting Things Done was he emphasized that you're a knowledge worker and you're always going to be busy. You're always going to be behind. So it's really easy to focus on catching up in your professional life and then not realizing that you have another manager at home, which is the people that you love. That manager you have to make happy too. And then, of course, there's yourself, too, as well, working on your own battery and recharging that battery. So it helps to recognize that just as you have an annual review with your manager, you should probably have an annual review with the people that you love and think about how you're going to prep for that annual review, what accomplishments you're going to be proud of in that annual review, and how you're going to say, here's how I'm on the right track for a better long-term career with the people that I love. So hopefully that answers that. Now you can see why, as we're like 15, 16 minutes into that, now you can see why I chose to spend a whole webcast just on those three questions. So hopefully that gives y'all some incentive to stop and think about how many hours a week you spend working. He says, as he sits on a balcony in Cabo, Mexico, drinking Diet Coke and tequila on a Sunday, no less. Technically, you could say that I'm working here on a Sunday, and that's part of what it's all about, is that figuring out what days and times work well for you for work, whatever work looks like. Me, when I have time by myself and somebody else is getting ready or I'm waiting on someone else to go get a massage or whatever, I'll decide, oh, I can spend some time with y'all, and, you know, does this really pay off in terms of my career? Probably not. It's just something that I enjoy and fulfills me giving back. So thanks for hanging out with me, and I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.